In a bracingly short time, Anglo-American optimism and idealism about free markets, foreign investment, and the rule of law found adherence in the most unlikely world capitals. Brand new nations brimming with oil and gas and others previously closed to Western corporations hung out for lease signs to lure geologists from Houston and London. Russia, Kazakhstan, Azerbaijan, Angola, Qatar, and tiny Equatorial Guinea on the West African coast soon to market itself through its Washington lobbyists as the Kuwait of Africa. These post-Cold War opportunities for American, British, French, and Italian oil companies could be ambiguous, risky, and sometimes fleeting. Resentful nationalism and suspicion of the United States and Europe persisted in many capitals of the new oil powers. State-owned petroleum companies from China, India, Brazil, and elsewhere were rising quickly as competitors. Exxon might be America's largest and most powerful oil corporation, but it would require all the political influence, financial resources, dazzling technology, speed, and stamina that its leaders could muster to seize the lucrative oil deals made possible by communism's fall and global capitalism's revival. The United States now stood unchallenged as a worldwide military power. Exxon's empire would increasingly overlap with America's, but the two were hardly contiguous. Pentagon policy, after the Soviet Union's demise, sought to keep international sea lanes free, to reduce the global danger of nuclear war, terrorism, and transnational crime, to manage or contain Russia and China, to secure Israel, and to foster, against long odds, a stable Middle East from which oil supplies vital for global economic growth could flow freely. Exxon benefited from the new markets and global commerce that American military hegemony now protected. Yet the corporation's activity also complicated American foreign policy. Exxon's far-flung interests were at times distinct from Washington's. Lee Raymond would manage Exxon's global position after 1989 as a confident sovereign, a peer of the White House's rotating occupants. Raymond aligned Exxon with America, but he was not always in sync. He was more akin to the President of France or the Chancellor of Germany. He did not manage the corporation as a subordinate instrument of American foreign policy. His was a private empire. Exxon's power within the United States derived from an independent, even rebellious lineage. The corporation had been hived off from John D. Rockefeller's Standard Oil monopoly in 1911, after a bruising antitrust campaign led by economic reformers and populist politicians. The visceral hostility toward Washington, sometimes eschewed by Exxon executives 8 decades later, suggested some of them had still not gotten over it. Exxon's size and the nature of its business model meant that it functioned as a corporate state within the American state. Like its forebearer, Standard, Exxon proved across decades that it was one of the most powerful businesses ever produced by American capitalism. From the 1950s through the end of the Cold War, Exxon ranked year after year as one of the country's very largest and most profitable corporations, always in the top 5 of the annual Fortune 500 lists. Its profit performance proved far more consistent and durable than that of other great corporate behemoths of America's post-war boom, such as General Motors, United States Steel, and IBM. In 1959, Exxon ranked as the second largest American corporation by revenue and profit. 4 decades later, it was third. And more than any of its corporate peers, Exxon's trajectory now pointed straight up. The corporation's revenues would grow fourfold during the 2 decades after the fall of the Berlin Wall, and its profits would smash all American records.